All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck sticks? What the fuck's the bulls? How are you? I'm Mark Maron. This is WTF. I am very excited to tell you that today on the show, Wanda Sykes, who I've known for years, who I actually saw when she started back in New York, and I'm excited to share this conversation I have with her because she's amazing. Now, let me just say one thing. At the very end of the interview, it's literally the last 4 seconds of this interview, you'll hear a change in the audio. I had a little problem with the recording, which happens very rarely, but luckily I had an external mic going, but it wasn't plugged into the board. But you'll be able to hear me and Wanda saying goodbye, so don't be jarred. Don't think that I don't know what's happening. All right? Okay, so that prepare yourself for nothing. 4 seconds, but I just want you to know that I'm aware of it. So what is happening? All right, well, I went down to Charlotte. This would be about a week ago I got back. Every time I go to the American South, and I like to call it that, it gives us some historical context, I am enamored with it. I usually want to stay there. I think I'd like to move here. There's something about it. There's something about whatever held it back initially, and I do think that they are progressing culturally, but whatever held it back and however it was judged for all these years has actually made it remain somewhat charming, very charming. It doesn't seem completely mollified. It does seem to have some rural appeal. It seems that people seem to actually integrate the cities from all class levels, from all types of lives. I don't see that too much. I mean, I see it a little in LA, but it's not as intimate here because it's all spread out, so I don't really know what's happening. You're in your car. But I'm always sort of charmed and excited to be down south. I also had an exciting food experience. Many of you know what I call the Southern shame spiral that I enter while I'm in the South, and usually for 3 days to a week after getting back from the South because of what I've eaten in the South. There's no way you're going to get out of North Carolina without being well cobblered. Yeah, there's a cobbler situation down there. I was down there for Oddball Fest, and the craft services or the catering at the venue at the amphitheater had two kinds of cobbler and vanilla ice cream, so there was really no reason to eat dinner. Cobbler will happen. Grits will happen. Biscuits has to happen. Biscuits and gravy, you can do that. You're going to do that. Just, you know, accept it. This trip, collard greens happened. Mac and cheese definitely happened. Bacon cupcakes, bacon caramel apple cupcakes were brought to me. I'd like to thank that woman and also tell her that my life is going to be shorter because of her. I believe it was worth it. I'm on the fence about that, but I ate them. Okay, so here's the story. I'm at this diner in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I'm about to order my two eggs over hard with grits and a biscuit. I'm about to order those. I know some of you are saying, really, over hard? What kind of horrible person are you? Who would eat eggs over hard? I'll tell you who. A guy who doesn't like runny fucking yolks. All right? Some days I can do it. Some days I can't. Some days I can't get past the fact that they're runny. I don't mind over hard eggs. I don't need to dip my fucking toast in yellow goo. All right. I like to eat my eggs over hard. I feel better when they're cooked. I don't mind it. And I can put them on a biscuit without it running all over everything. There's something gross about yolks. Quite honestly, there's something gross about eggs. And just get off my back. All right. Over hard's how I go. All right. Unless I'm feeling adventurous and feeling like, no, maybe over medium be nice with a little goo to them. Sometimes I'll take a little goo, but not full goo. All right, so I'm looking at the menu at this place, and I'm looking at the meats because I wasn't going to get a meat because I thought, like, I don't really need a meat. I'm doing the cholesterol thing already with the yolks that are hard, not runny. And in the list of meats there in Charlotte, North Carolina, it's bacon, sausage, I believe ham was making an appearance. And then the last meat on the list was liver mush. Liver mush. Liver mush. What the fuck is liver mush? I don't know what liver mush is. I've never seen those words together. There's nothing appetizing about those words separately. Together, just nasty. But I knew, well, I don't know what this is, and I wonder if anybody eats it. It must be some regional thing, and I can't imagine. Maybe they just have it on there for the old people. Sometimes, if a diner's worth its salt, they'll have a couple of things on there, whether it's a Jewish diner, a Jew diner, or whether it's a Southern diner where they got a couple of things on there that no one eats but your grandpa. So I said, liver mush. You want to, I said that to a waitress. I said, what is liver mush? And she, I believe I'll paraphrase here. She says, yeah, I don't know if you'd like it if you didn't grow up with it. And I'm like, okay. So I'm getting a little information. There's a regional specialty or cuisine or slab of meat that is an acquired taste. And then there was another woman there who was working there, and she said, I like it. I like it a lot. I grew up with it. And I'm like, okay. But she says, but I don't know if you'll like it. I'm like, I'm getting it. You guys are assuming that I'm not going to like your weird, regional particle meat, which is, I assumed is what it was. So, of course, I got to go back to my hotel room and, do some research on liver mush. Because, I've been to Scotland, and Scotland's got some pretty gnarly meats. And I'll try just about anything. I've tried haggis. I've tried blood pudding. I've tried Lorne sausage in Scotland. Scotland does a lot with meats or at least, utilizing, pieces of the animal that, might go unnoticed or actually thrown away. So I'm figuring it's in that family. And sure enough, I'm right. They actually believe that it goes back a little further to the German settlers in Appalachia before the Civil War. And it sort of kind of moved down from there. Germans are meat-eating people and do a lot of work with the sausages and that type of meat. That's a nice thing about Germans. They do sausage, and we know them for that, brats. So as I read on, basically liver mush is pig's liver and head meat. So basically, these kind of foods, generally devolve into something that someone makes because they're like, don't throw that away. Don't throw that away. We can't afford to throw that. Just bring the pig head over here and scrape off the meat and bring the innards, too. So that's what that is. It's believe me, I understand, the hunter's credo that I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's something around the idea of eating the entire animal. And I believe that that's a noble and righteous thing to do if you're going to honor the animal that you kill, you should at least eat as much of it as possible. This was a thrifty creation. It's basically pig's liver, head meat, and some other bits and pieces, ground into a mush and then formed into a brick, a sliceable brick of meat product that is relatively thinly sliced and fried on a griddle. So now I know what it is, and I know another thing on a deeper level is that I have to try it. I have to try this stuff because that's who I am. I am not going to be surprised by a regional meat product and not put it in my fucking pie hole. So I work up the courage to try the liver mush. So the next morning, I go back into that diner. And I sit down, and I'm sitting next to a woman, and she's actually eating slabs of liver mush. And I'm like, I'm going to do it. So the waitress sitting next to me goes, you should get it crispy. I like it crispy, so they fry it crispy. So I get my grits and my biscuit and my eggs over hard, and I get my liver mush. And I cut a piece off, and I'm like, that is not bad at all. As a matter of fact, it's good. But to be honest with you, when you order these kind of things, or at least when I do, a Yankee, a Northerner, a guy with a slightly heightened palate, my brain thinks like, why would anyone eat this shit if you could afford not to? And I think that's a reasonable question. I think Southerners ask that question themselves, but most of them answer themselves with, oh, my grandma used to eat it and she made it for us. It's a nostalgic thing. And sometimes nostalgia is triggered by an acquired taste. I mean, I thought it was great. I mean, I loved it, really, but it's not every day loved it. But, maybe when I'm down there again, I'll be like, I'm going to enjoy some liver mush. It's not unlike the region itself. It was interesting, rich, practical, and slightly disturbing. I can scratch that off the secret bucket list because I didn't know it was on there. Try liver mush. Check. Very excited to finally get Wanda Sykes into the garage. I've always loved her. I remember her when she started. I remember her when she was Wanda Sykes Hall. I remember Wanda. I was already an established comic when she started, and she used to just come in with her husband at the time, do her set. She was meek and polite in a lot of ways. What an evolution to the comedic force that she has become. And we talk about everything, and it's great. So let's go now to my conversation with Wanda Sykes. So Sherman Oaks, I mean, like, so what, did you just come on the 134?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't a bad drive. And my office is in Glendale, so it's really easy. Yeah.
I know that building, your office building, because I was in that office building.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That weird-ass building.
Uh-huh. The
Hollywood.
Well, yeah, Hollywood Productions.
Yeah.
Where if you're on one side, you're on the fifth floor,
right,
and the other side,
it's
you're
just
on the
a weird building.
Floor. It's very weird.
And then there's offices there where you're like, what's going on there?
It's like, I know there's porn.
Yeah, right.
Somebody's adding porn in there. I know that.
Yeah.
It got to be.
Some offices are just a guy sitting there. Like, what is that guy doing? Next to our office, there was a talent agent that I didn't know what that meant. Anybody can do anything in this town. So, well, I'm excited you're here, Wanda.
I'm excited to be here,
because I feel like it's weird, because I remember you. Like, I feel like I met you when you were just growing up in comedy.
True.
You were this woman that came with straight hair.
Uh-huh.
And a pear-shaped man.
Right.
who would sit patiently.
I don't know about patiently. I remember seeing a few, hearing a few, you know,
oh,
finger
really?
Taps.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just, but like and then all of a sudden you became, you know, Wanda Sykes. Before it was like Wanda Sykes Hall, and you're very polite, and you're very quiet, and you're almost like mousy on stage.
Uh-huh. A little submissive.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden it's like, who's this? When did this happen? Who's this new person? You know, like, I don't know. Well, we could get to that, but I don't even know where you came from. What was the journey? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Virginia, but only until like the third grade, and then my family, we moved to Maryland. Ooh, big move, right?
Yeah.
My dad was in the military, so
like a big deal in the military.
He ended up being a big deal.
Really?
Yeah. Retired colonel.
A colonel.
Yeah.
So he was like
full
a lifer.
Colonel. Yeah. Oh
so,
yeah.
So you grew up in the military your whole life.
Right.
And your mom was she also in?
She started off in like a major newspaper in Virginia, like the Virginia Pilot. She
writing?
Was in, she was in the, no, like the, she worked for like the classified
uh-huh.
section, classified ad section. Uh-huh. And then when we moved to Maryland, she stayed home because, you know, we didn't have that family support system
of
relatives taking care of us and stuff while she worked. So she stayed home for a while. And then when I got to the age where she felt like, you know, that I was old enough where she could hang a key around my neck and let me, you know, go home after school by myself, which is terrifying.
I do. The thought of it now, it's weird.
Isn't that crazy?
I don't know if the fear needs to be there, but it is.
It is.
Like when we were kids, my grandmother would let me take the bus into New York, 14. Go ahead, have a good time. Just get on the subway when you get out of Port Authority. 14, you know, like
Port Authority.
Right. Who would do that?
It's crazy.
I guess we need to be afraid.
Yeah.
I guess we do. I mean, you have kids.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Are you terrified?
They're terrified.
How old are they?
They're five.
Yeah. Well, you can't just throw a key around a five-year-old.
Not at all. The backyard, it's fenced.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we have a nice fence.
Yeah.
Back fenced in backyard.
Don't go beyond the fence.
If they're out back, I still have to be able to see them.
Right.
You don't know what could jump the fence.
Or they could fall down or whatever. But I mean, the fear of someone jumping the fence is a little much, but I understand.
Right. It's a little much, but it's there. I'm not going to deny it.
Right.
I have it.
Well, no, I have weird fears too, and I don't even have kids. I have fears that something from space is going to fall onto my bedroom. Like I'm going to be woken up by space garbage. I mean, it's ridiculous. I can't even go to sleep sometimes. But it's not about me.
I can see like a satellite dish, you know.
Right. Well, no, like literally like a
DirecTV. I'm not talking about from space. I'm not talking about from the, you know.
No, I'm talking about like a piece comes off a spacecraft and just comes down. That's how special I think I am. That I'm going to be the one hit by space junk.
Well, don't go see Gravity, man, because it's, you know.
I did see it.
Okay.
That's
so
scary,
all that stuff.
So did you grow up in a big family?
No, just I just have an older brother.
Oh,
that's
yeah?
It. It's just two of us.
Where'd he end up?
He's in Virginia.
Is he like what? Is he in the military?
You know what? He works for a contractor.
Yeah,
with government things.
Oh, government contractor.
and that's all he tells me. I have no idea.
Yeah, those mysterious government contracting jobs.
Something like that
could be up to no good. Could be great. Top secret either way.
Who knows? He could be, you know,
well, you're
shredding paper, or he could be building computer systems.
That's right.
I have no idea what he does.
Or doing an all-cash business somewhere in Pakistan.
Who knows?
Yeah, whatever. The government's, you know, they're behind it, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah, as long as he's happy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's all that matters. His morality is not your issue. It's like, what makes a guy happy? But if your dad was in the military, I mean, that's like a very specific type of childhood, isn't it? I mean, don't you have to behave? Is he sitting at dinner in uniform? I mean, how's that?
No, no. Oh. I really appreciated my father's approach to it because it was a job, you know, an honorable job.
Right.
You know, but he didn't really bring it home that, you know, he didn't run our house like a camp or like, you know.
Right.
So, yes, you know, so we didn't have that. And also we never lived on post. We never lived on the base. He always wanted us to you know, just go to whatever the neighborhood school was.
Right.
We never like got base housing. I think it was financially better for him because he'd rather take the, you know, get the allotment of the
for the living,
for housing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he'd get a decent house.
But you were living outside of DC?
Yeah.
Well, that's the biggest base.
Way DC.
That's sort of a base in itself.
Right. We were closer to Annapolis.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And where did he end up? Where did he go to work every day?
He, Fort Meade.
Yeah.
He would go to Fort Meade and then the Pentagon. So he was going back and forth between.
The Pentagon.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's the thing. Like, okay, first he's at Fort Meade and then his, you know, that tour is up. So it's down to get his next duty.
Yeah.
So we're all like, oh God, you know, my brother and I are like, yo, we going to Germany, you know, I'm going to Japan. Where are we going?
Yeah.
You know? And, I'm going to the Pentagon. You know, all our family, all your friends and stuff. Also their dads or whatever in the military. They're taking off, packing up.
Right. Nope.
Nope.
Not for you.
We're just staying right here.
What do you know what his role was in the Pentagon?
At one point, I know he did something for the Secretary of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I know he worked for whoever that guy was.
Yeah. The big military stuff.
Yeah,
and he's retired now?
Yes.
And he's still around, though?
Yes. He just turned 80.
Yeah, and where's your family come from?
Virginia.
This is all Virginia?
Yeah.
Do you have family there still?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my parents, they moved back. Once they retired, they moved back.
I don't really have a sense of Virginia. Is it lovely?
There's parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you just make sure you can always see some water. That's it. You know, like, that inward stuff.
Not comfortable.
I'm not comfortable. Yeah.
That's still a little dicey.
It gets a little dicey around Roanoke and all.
Oh, does it?
You know?
Yeah. Even if you're wearing a Kia around your neck?
A Lynchburg? I mean, come on.
It's in the name. You know what I mean? I know they say everything's okay.
Yeah.
I get a little flack for shitting on the South occasionally, but I have to be honest, as much as I've grown to love the South, there's still some parts that are kind of scary.
Oh yeah,
even for me.
Oh yeah,
and I'm making it up.
Right.
In my head.
So imagine me.
I know.
Driving through Mississippi.
Do you really feel that?
Hell yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I think
all Black people feel that
historically.
Who are not from the South, but maybe even the ones who live in the South. I mean, you go there, and you look around. If you get a dirty look, I'm like, okay. Yeah. And me, I have to try to figure out what's the dirty look about. Is it because I'm Black? Is it because I'm a Black woman?
Yeah.
Is it the gay thing?
Yeah.
You could hate me on so many different levels.
Well, I gotta tell you, if you're driving through the South and someone on the side of the road goes like, "That's she's gay," then like your advertising, like, I don't think they're that perceptive.
You don't think so? Okay. All right.
Not unless you tell them.
If I was like, you know, making out with my wife or something, then they would. Yeah. I think that would tip them.
Well, if you got out of the car and said, "Is there a problem? Is it because I'm Black, a woman, or gay? Where are we at? What are you mad about?" But I guess I think that's probably true, and it's interesting that no matter how much progress is made, that there's going to be a certain line that you cross into certain states. If you're Black, you're going to be like, this historically not a good place.
No.
I don't care if they're happy. I don't care if I see other Black people. There's something.
Something.
They might not be there on their own will.
Right.
they have to be there. How long did it take you to get to comedy? I mean, what did you study in school?
In school, I studied marketing because basically
in college you went to college.
Yeah, I went to college. Went to Hampton University.
Yeah,
and I studied got a degree in marketing, and it's basically because I didn't know what the hell else I wanted to do.
That's one of those degrees. That's one communications, of those degrees.
Yeah, give me
marketing,
one of those. Yeah.
Business.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you learned
this, right
anything?
Actually, yes. Yeah. As far as like business wise, with the
you had skills. Of
something? Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Did you end up using them? Did you work?
I used them in this business.
But did you
after college, I ended up working for the government. I ended up, you know, well, first I started off in retail. I think I worked for Hex. It was Hex Department Store.
Oh yeah.
It was kind of like it's like Macy's Light.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I worked there. And I was getting into their, you know, like management trainee program.
Yeah.
And then I realized like, I don't want to fold clothes all day. I don't want to hang up stuff. I don't even like clothes that much. What the hell am I doing?
There's that moment.
I'm not a fashionista. What the hell am I doing?
It's not the last straw. It's the last shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
This is it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And then you ended up for the government.
Yeah. So from there I ended up, I had my applications and resumes out and everything for different government positions. I worked at Walter Reed.
The hospital?
Yeah, but it was a research center.
Yeah.
So I worked for them for a while, but as a purchasing agent.
Yeah, not
and
as
then,
a...
And then from there, I went to NSA.
National Security Administration? Mm-hmm. Can you talk
agency.
About it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I think.
Are you allowed?
It's so long ago that I'm sure whatever I know is like
public information.
Meaningful. Yeah, it's, yeah by now.
But was there a time where you're like, they told you like, can't talk?
Oh, hell yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's your first day. That's orientation.
Really?
Yeah, man. Yeah, once you get that top secret, clearance. Yeah. Actually, I have I had a clearance that's above top secret because of the nature of the projects that I was working on.
Really?
Yeah. I was like doing Desert Storm. I was logistically, doing some stuff, moving uh-huh. some things around.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you were, but
I was all buying things. I was a purchasing.
Oh,
agent.
So that was
yeah.
the department.
Yes.
So it was more like sort of like you don't have to let anyone know that we bought those.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. It was all secure. Yeah.
But were there ever moments where you're looking at it, it's like, what do they need these for? Why do they need women's underwear? Two boxes of women's underwear. That doesn't make any sense.
Wife beaters. This is crazy. A case of wife beaters? Yeah, all right.
I don't know. That's interesting, though. They're like, you're sworn to secrecy under the law.
Right. Because a lot of things, you know, we would just get these schematics, you know,
right.
like, well, I had no idea what this thing did, but
right.
it was
right.
here. We need this thing.
Yeah.
Go out and find out how much it will cost to build this thing.
So you didn't know what it was.
I was like, all right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just looked to see if there was like anything that had like one of those handles, you know, like when you blow up stuff, you know. I was like, let me see. That could be a handle. I don't know.
That's right. With the name Acme on the box.
Right. So
you didn't really know what was going on, but you still had to have security clearance.
Exactly.
And what made you stop working for the government? I guess your dad probably said that it's probably a good line of work. Stay in just one way or the other,
exactly.
Get your pension.
I know. I think I was a GS-9 or GS-11.
Yeah.
When I left.
What
I
does that
remember.
Mean?
That's just your grade and pay.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So what made you stop that?
I started doing a real shitty job at it. You know, I just was like...
You lost your...
Yeah, I lost the focus and, you know, it was like a file and, you know, a contract would come in and I was like, what time is happy hour? I'll get to this tomorrow.
So
I was like, you can't operate like that in that position. You just can't.
So you're already soul dead.
Yeah. I gotta get out of it. Yeah. And then I looked around, it was like other people who've been there for like 20 years and just reading the paper and
dying at their desk.
It was like
awful.
I gotta get out of here.
So then what happens next?
I was still there.
Were you married at that point?
No, not yet. But no, not yet. I I was still there, but I got the comedy bug. You know, I heard about a contest on the radio station about talent show, and comedy was one of the categories. And I don't know. I said, you know, I'm gonna see if I can get into this thing.
Really?
Yeah.
It was just like that.
Just like that.
Did you like comics? Did you?
Yeah. Oh, I love comedy. Yeah.
So it was already in you that.
Right.
But you never thought that it was a job you could necessarily do.
Here's the thing, and I've never really said this because it could come across as like a put down, but it's not meant to be.
Right.
But I remember watching Whoopi Goldberg's HBO special Around the World.
Yeah.
And in 80 Days, whatever. So I was watching that and I was laughing a lot, but something said, hey, I can do this.
Yeah, she can do it.
Yeah, but also, it's not as a diss. It's as, you know, it's especially.
She made it seem easy.
Like it became something tangible to me. A black woman doing an HBO special, performing in front of all these people.
Right.
And it made it. Right. You know, seem like, oh, you know what? I can do this.
Right. Someone's doing it.
Exactly.
It's a job available.
Right. Exactly.
So Whoopi did it.
Right.
Have you met her since?
Yeah.
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 And did you tell her that? No.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think I told her that. No.
I have no idea what she's like. Yeah. I mean,
she's cool. Whoopi's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. I don't think there's anything. I don't think like what you see, the persona that you see on TV is different from what I've encountered. Uh-huh. Yeah, she's cool.
Because she's interesting because she started, I think, as a one person show thing, one woman show. I think she used to do it at the Comedy Store and she'd do characters. Like I don't get the feeling that she came up and stand up the same way you did necessarily. I think she was always doing characters and putting together big shows.
Yeah.
And you sometimes forget that's, you know, she was a stand up.
Yeah.
So, okay, exactly.
But before Whoopi, though, it's like, you know, Moms Mabley was huge to me.
Really?
As a kid. Yeah.
I can see that. Brothers. That makes sense. Yeah. Moms Mabley makes sense.
Yeah, the Smothers Brothers. I mean, I used to watch all that stuff.
But that's like, seriously, old school. I mean, how old are you? Do you tell your age?
No, I'm 50. I just turned 50.
I'm 52.
Yeah.
Or not 52. I'm 50 as well.
Also, yeah.
And Moms Mabley still before our time. So did your old man have those records? How'd you see that stuff?
I remember seeing her on shows.
Like, yeah, maybe. Yeah, like, when she was real back old. Then,
yeah, it was like.
Maybe she was on the Smothers Brothers or Laughing.
Yeah, she was on the Smothers Brothers. She was on. Because I remember watching the Smothers Brothers.
Yeah.
Because my grandmother would get mad at how Tommy was being treated. She just, you know, that just annoyed her. She's like, that boy, I should want to just beat him bad one day. She would just, I was like, that would make me laugh. Even as a kid, I knew it was an act.
Right.
But she just,
took it literally. That was her take on it. It wasn't a comedy.
It wasn't even comedy. It just was just bad behavior.
Well, who has, I wonder where Moms Mabley, because I know.
Flip Wilson show.
I remember that. I mean, we were really young.
Yeah.
For Flip Wilson.
Yeah.
And he'd come out dancing, right? Uh-huh. In the big lights, Flip Wilson.
Right.
Pygmy Markham was on Laughing, because Here Comes the Judge.
Here Comes the Judge.
Because they did that.
Yeah. Well, Flip Wilson started doing Here Comes the Judge.
Is that who was doing it?
He started doing it.
And that wasn't his, but no one called him a thief.
Right. I know, right?
And then he did Geraldine. I remember this stuff vaguely.
Yeah.
So those were the ones that kind of planted a seed in your head.
Yeah.
And then Whoopi made it a practical thing. Were you like, who were the other people as you grew up? Do you remember watching other comics?
Yeah, of course, Carlin.
Right?
I love George Carlin.
Yeah, yeah.
Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Cosby.
Well, what was it like in terms of how you grew up in what was the black community you grew up in? I mean, like in terms of like, was Pryor part of it? Like when Pryor came out, like did your parents, did your friends?
You know what? My parents, they had a few party albums.
That's what they call party albums.
Yeah. I think they had a Red Fox album, but I didn't get to listen to things until I would go over to my friend's house.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but like a couple of uncles, they had, you know.
Yeah.
They had the party.
Because they were dirty.
Yeah, they had the party out.
Yeah, that's what they were called, party albums. Red Fox put out like a dozen of those things.
Right.
Those party albums.
Right.
So they were grown-up stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so you're working for the government. Your soul is dying. Mm-hmm. You see Whoopi Goldberg. You hear about a contest.
Right.
And what do?
I sat down, wrote some jokes.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I went down to the Classics nightclub in D.C. and I went there, and and I auditioned.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, yeah, great. I'm going to put you on the show. I'm like, all right, cool. And that was it. I got on the show, killed. I didn't win. I think Tony Woods, he beat me. Tony Woods was the other comic. It was like Tony. three comics. Tony Woods won that night.
Oh.
But the guy who was emceeing, Andy Evans, he was like, you know, who are you and where'd you come from? Because you know, didn't go to any of the clubs. That was the first time.
Right.
That anyone had seen me.
Were you the only like amateur on the show, or was it mostly local comedians?
It was local comedians.
Right.
Yeah.
Was some from the D.C. area?
Yeah.
So it was Tony, mm-hmm. and I don't know who else was down there.
Chappelle
was.
Greg Poole. Yeah. No, Chappelle wasn't
too
on the
young.
Show, but Chappelle was around.
But he must have been 12. Chappelle, 16 years old.
Maybe 14, I guess. 14,
crazy.
15. Chappelle was around.
Following Tony around? Right? Wasn't that his original mentor?
I think Chappelle and Tony didn't really start hanging out until he got to New York. I think once
Chappelle,
I think so.
Because I got the feeling that
of course we were all around Tony, you know, in D.C. and all. But I think when
Dave Edwards too, right?
Yeah, Dave Edwards.
I wonder what happened to that kid. What happened to that kid?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Once he got kicked off of, of the Real World.
That was the end of it.
Yeah.
And Tony Woods, there's always going to be Tony Woods. Like, oh, yeah, Tony Woods.
Yeah.
Wait, what? How's he doing? He's so funny, man.
I know. He's so funny.
It's one of those guys where you're sort of like, why is he?
Just get your shit together, man. That's, you know, it was like you have all the pieces to the puzzle are right there. Just put it together.
It's so weird when that happens, but you know, in comedy you see it a lot. You're like, come on,
right?
Come what? And who they? And people can't just tell people that because they're like, I'm doing everything I can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. All my stuff's in my car. So that's all you can do, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. So what happens after the contest? You quit your job.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. But I start going to the clubs. You mm-hmm. know,
hanging out.
Andy Evans told me, okay, you have to come to the clubs. You got to work out. You know, Thursday nights, come to the cafe, Comedy Cafe.
Yeah.
Did you ever work Comedy Cafe?
At the
DC?
Very end.
Okay.
It was the last week, I think. Didn't that guy own a strip club?
Yeah,
too?
It was
right.
all in the same building.
Right.
It was club.
Right.
I mean, comedy club, sports bar, yeah. and then strip.
Right. Yeah, I did. I think I worked it the last week it was open.
Okay.
And it was not a good week for me.
Yeah. I can imagine.
What was it ever a good club?
Yeah, it was. It was.
And you started there?
Mm-hmm. Started mm-hmm. there and then over to Garvin's. Then I started doing like one-nighters for Chip Franklin.
Well, see, that's the one-nighter thing. That like a lot of people on the West Coast don't, I don't know if that's part of your story if you came up in New York anywhere.
Right.
There was always one-nighters in places.
Yeah.
Like I came up in Boston. That's how you started.
Yeah.
You just drive to wherever the fuck it was.
Right.
You don't know what you're walking into.
Not at all.
And
what's
going to happen in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah.
you're doing that. You're opening for
uh-huh.
people
uh-huh.
for like traveling headliners.
Yep.
Do you remember the first time you opened for a person? You're like, holy shit, this guy's got the goods. Like, because I remember opening for people, and there's two things that happen. They're like, how come this guy isn't bigger?
Oh,
and then, is this the life that I'm going to lead? You know, like,
what? At the Comedy Cafe, I opened for Brian Regan.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I was like, man, this guy is so funny.
How do you get that funny?
Yeah.
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 That's that feeling you get with him.
Right.
Like, I still get that. Like, how do you stay that funny?
Yeah.
That must
have
been
great.
He's
still killing it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still killing it.
So, all right. So when do you commit your life to the comedy?
Once I became a middle act.
Right.
Once I became a middle act and I saw that I could, you know, travel.
Right.
Make a decent, you know, decent
right.
enough money to survive.
Yeah.
That's when I said, you know what? I'm out of here.
Yeah. And where'd you go?
Went to be closer to New York. So Keith Robinson and I were good friends, you know. So he's out of Philly. Keith was living in Philly. I was living in Maryland at the time.
I love Keith.
And was like, let's go to New York. So we said, okay, all right, cool. So we picked a date. And we, at that time, that's when I got married. I got married before
let's talk about that for a minute.
Oh, God, really?
Well, just as like...
Okay.
Just out of my own curiosity.
Right.
Because, I mean, you're out.
Uh-huh.
Now, when did you know?
No.
You had no idea.
Well, okay, I'll put it this way.
Where'd you meet him?
Let's say I dabbled.
Yeah.
I dabbled.
What, in college?
Yeah, well, out of college, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. So you had it.
Right.
Something.
Yes. I knew something was there. But then, you know, it's like, ooh, I can't do that. Yeah, what are you doing? Well, you know, I was raised in the church and all that. So I was like, oof, what are you doing?
Really?
Yeah.
That's what stopped you, church?
I think so.
And also the whole idea, it's sort of like, well, that's a whole lifestyle.
Yeah, I got to get a new wardrobe. I got to, oh, man.
Got to deal with another woman shit.
Oh, boy. You know, there's too much conversation.
So it wasn't just all consuming. It was just there.
Right.
So when your husband, you don't need to.
And plus, I've been dating guys all since.
And
you
it
know,
was okay?
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It was what it was.
You know, it was good for, until I had the other thing to compare it to. And I was what the hell was I doing back then? That was. Oof.
So where'd you meet your husband?
I worked with his sister.
So you meet him, you date, and you get married.
Yeah. Move to Jersey.
With him.
And Keith.
Keith is living with you guys?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's you and your husband and Keith?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Where'd you meet Keith? He's from Philly.
Keith, where did we meet? It was either at a club in Baltimore or a club in D.C. But, you know, the Philly guys, they would either drive down to D.C. or, you know, whatever.
You didn't date Keith, did you?
Oh, no. It was, so Keith and I, we've always been friends from the jump. Now, he tried. It was so funny. He tried. He tried to put a couple of moves on me. And I was like, Keith, please, no. This is not going to work. And then I told him, and he always says this broke his heart. I told him that if, I said, you know what, even if we did date or whatever, I said, I would totally cheat on you. You're just somebody that you just cheat on.
Keith, because that's the best part of his story is like he's a failed pimp. Like he wanted to be a pimp, but he couldn't get over on the girls and they take advantage of him. I love that story.
Yeah, that's Keith.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
That's really what makes him like so endearing is that like. He puts on this big effect.
Right.
But like just a sweet, insecure guy in there.
He's a sweetheart. Yeah. He really is.
So, okay, you're living in Jersey with your husband and Keith. And apparently like your husband is driving you to the clubs. Because that's the one thing I remember. When did you start going into New York?
As soon as we got to, that was probably in 92, I guess, is when I started popping up in the clubs in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where are you going?
Boston Comedy Club.
So that's where I first saw it. That room where like, you know, everybody kind of was able to get on. It was like the only room in the city where you didn't have to, the auditioning process wasn't that difficult.
Not at all.
You just had to, you know, ask Jason Steinberg.
Yeah, just say hi to Jason. Just be nice to Jason.
And he'll throw you on.
Yeah. You want to go on? Yeah, man. Yeah, I would love to. Okay.
Eight people. There's always like 8 to 12 people.
Right.
Except on the weekends.
Yeah. You know, it's bad when there's more comics in the room than audience.
On that back balcony.
All comics,
and there's like 9 people. Right. We're all just chomping at the bit to get on.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny that I just remember you hanging out with your husband who didn't talk.
Yeah, I remember he he had this thing. He didn't like guys hugging me or the other comics or whatever. Like your comics would, you know, hey, want to hug and maybe give you, you know, we got kissed each other on the cheek or whatever. Yeah. That would drive him nuts.
Really?
Nuts.
So he was a possessive guy.
Yeah.
And that's why
he has issues.
And that's why he was there.
Pretty much.
But you never cut him loose. He was always there.
How you going to cut a big motherfucker like that loose? I mean, you can't be like.
But he was sort of doughy big. He wasn't, you know, like ripped. I don't, you know, I know you may, you don't have to talk too bad about him, but what was his job?
You know, here's the thing. Overall, really nice guy, very smart, just frustrated. He was just a frustrated guy, just didn't know what, you know, just needed to land someplace.
Right.
That's all, as far as career and everything. So, you know, it just didn't, work out.
Well, so you start going to Cellar, which is where I remember the most, because like Esty... And you are Esty, who books the Cellar now, are great friends.
Yes.
But like, I remember when he started working there. So like at that time, you know, she would use me sometimes. Mark Cohen was around, Louis, Attell, Keith, you know, and then that whole scene, you know, Colin, you know, and then, you know, all those people. And then you started coming around. And I just remembered there was...
I got into the Cellar before Keith got into the Cellar.
Right.
Yeah.
But I remember watching you specifically... And like you always were funny, but like you were sort of like poised, Uh-huh. And your confidence, like, you were, it was very joke focused.
Uh-huh.
You weren't, you know, you didn't have any looseness to
right,
you.
Right.
And you were very polite off yes. stage and uh-huh. very composed and sort of grateful and deferring to these other comics in the way that you were just nice and you seemed to be thrilled to be part of it.
Right.
Am I wrong?
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
So, like, what happened, you know, to sort of, because you're radically different than you were then in a way.
I think, you know, it's, I started talking about what was real and truthful to me.
You know, remember that moment?
Authentic. Yeah, it was going through the divorce. That you know, that the end of that marriage and going through the divorce, it was really liberating. It was like, wow, okay, now, you know, I don't have to answer to anyone.
Right. You know? Now, when you went through the divorce, was it because of your sexuality or just other problems?
Just other problems.
Oh, right. So
other
it was just the natural yeah. breakdown.
Yeah. But when you know, the final straw, then I was like, okay, this is it. I'm out. It was very liberating. It
right.
felt like, you know, the chains had come off and it's like, wow, okay.
Right, right.
And, you know, immediately it hit me. I was like, I'm a beautiful girl.
Yeah.
You know, it was like.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know.
So you found your confidence.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were able to sort of like have your own voice.
I tried it. Yeah. I was like, hey, I tried to make it work. I tried it, you know.
Right.
But do what you're supposed to do. But right. now.
Fuck it.
Fuck it. Yeah.
But because I have to assume that, like, you know, having that dude, you know, riding you or just being there, mm-hmm. you're always going to check yourself. So there's no way to have a voice if you're constantly in relation. Because
right.
I've been in that too. Like, you know, you don't want to get off stage and have them go like, well, why would you say that about me?
Exactly.
Or, yeah. Were you
exactly.
talking about me? And then you have to
exactly.
go like, no, it's general. I'm just trying to. So like that whole thing
that
is a
whole
nightmare.
Thing. Yeah.
Like, the very least, I think I always felt bad for you because like most of us are like, I'm not going to take my chick to the club. You know, because, you know, how am I going to talk about her if she's sitting right there?
I know.
So that must have just drove you crazy.
Yes.
How much fighting did you do about your material?
A lot.
Right.
A lot.
So you made the choice. You had to make the choice.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And, but are you guys okay now or no?
No. Well, yeah. With that, you know, it was
done.
Like, I don't, yeah.
yeah.
It
wasn't even that long.
We don't have any kids. We
right.
don't have any pets or anything to share. So
right.
it was like, okay, bye. And
right.
That's
so you,
it.
All right. So you start talking about, you know, finding your own place in the world and the mm-hmm. divorce and stuff, and your whole style changes.
Yeah.
You get a little dirtier.
Yep.
Yeah,
more honest.
Yeah.
And
what started to happen from that? Like, when did you start getting opportunities? Because I know Louis always used it, but what was the first break?
The Chris Rock show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You got divorced and then got the Chris Rock show.
No, actually, I got the Chris Rock show, and
yeah.
then, yeah. And then,
so then
like
that probably
maybe like two, I think I was like two seasons in. And Chris Rock show, and then got divorced.
Well, was he? He must have been jealous of that.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
And not only that, was coming to, you know, every taping
right.
of the show.
Right.
And then, you know, Chris's show, we were pretty out there. We did some edgy stuff, and then he would.
And you're busy.
And yes. Then he would critique the show and say, you know, I don't know why you did that bit.
Right.
You shouldn't. What better? Did you write that joke? Yeah. You shouldn't have written. I was like,
oh my
yeah.
God.
It's just.
Did Chris say anything about it?
No, I so tried to keep them, you know, as far apart as possible.
And
so, I mean, of course, the guys were all joke on me at the, you know,
right.
at the office,
right.
which was pretty funny.
Right.
So yeah.
it was the original Chris
mm-hmm.
Rock show. So mm-hmm. who was on that? Louis,
Jeff Stilson,
Sklar,
Chuck Sklar,
Agna.
Tom came later.
Uh huh.
He wasn't the original.
Was
Ali LaRoy,
Lance
Crowther.
Yeah. Lance was Pootie Tang.
John Heyman, yeah.
John Heyman, that sounds
yeah.
right. So what was that like? What was that that experience like when, you know, like, because I've never written on a show. And was Louis the head writer at that time?
Jeff Stilson.
Oh, Stilson was.
Yeah.
So you'd be working with all these guys that you know, and you're trying to build it. Like, it was a pretty provocative show. It was really
mm-hmm.
the first time that I think, you know, on a talk show format that, you know, black issues are really dissected and done every, you know, every show.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that like working in that environment? Did anyone, like, was there, what was the conversation? Because most of the writing staff was white. And was it, you know, did Chris sit there with everything and every, you know, go over everything and it all went through Chris?
Yeah, everything went through Chris.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was, like Chris, he never gave any directive of, right. of you know, okay, we got to talk about black stuff or right. whatever. It yeah. was just funny and, yeah. and just try to put everything, you know, in Chris's voice, you know, right. his sensibility. But then right. again, Chris also staffed, you know, had staffed the you know, the writers for people who would, you know, would come up with things that he never would have thought right, of, like right. Louis C.K., right. you know, and Chuck Sklar, because he wanted all those elements, you know.
Right, right.
So so he didn't need a whole, you know, like a black right. staff, whatever.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He just wanted, you know, some diversity as far as in style, more so than in...
What's
you know.
That? Who's that friend of his? Was he around too? The guy who wrote for the Village Voice? The
Nelson George.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nelson was a producer. Yeah, he was a producer on the show. So he handled more like the interviews,
right.
the guests and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's a smart guy,
but,
man.
Yeah, but it was cool. It was a great... I still credit Chris for everything that I know about TV and you know,
yeah.
and doing a show and running a show.
Yeah.
Because he let us do that. You know, yeah. it's like you submit your jokes to Jeff... Jeff takes the jokes to Chris. Chris would check off the ones he wants to do, and then that's, you know, that's the monologue.
For the monologue, yeah.
Yeah, and then we have a pitch meeting. Okay, come in. I need, you know, in studio
yeah.
bits. So yeah. we all pitch. Chris, okay, write that up.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And you did, that was that the first time you did acting, too?
Yeah.
So did you ever train to act, or you just did it?
Mm-mm.
No.
Just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I started taking classes, and... Then I got nervous that the classes were going to mess me up because I thought I had, you know, because now I'm in my head yeah. thinking about stuff. So yeah. I was like, I don't know about these classes, man.
They made you more self-conscious?
Yes.
Like, I don't need
yes.
technique. I just yeah. need to be me.
I was, who's Greg Giraldo was in the class with me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Whose class was that? Was it that woman? Was it a woman? I can't remember.
Yes, we all went to her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was like specialized Gosh. In comics or something.
Yes.
Right? They were all in there,
oh,
huh?
Geez.
Dave Anthony.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on my show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. He yeah. wrote and he acted. He's in a lot of them. And I told him, I said, you know, when I was on this season of my show, I'm like, keep an eye on me. Because I know he's got a sense of
uh-huh.
it. You know, he's pretty good with that.
Uh-huh.
All right, so you do the Chris Rock show for how many seasons?
How many seasons did we
know.
Do? Five?
And,
I don't know.
And
yeah,
then
for the whole run.
And
yeah.
then is that how you built the relationship with Louis?
Yes. Yes. Although I was cool with Louie before we, you know,
right.
we did the show. Because actually, when I started writing, like that first week or whatever, I would go to Louie
yeah.
and ask him, you know, for yeah. some guidance or help. Because, you know, I'd never written on a show before.
Right.
So I'm like, and he would look over my stuff and go, okay, because I would just write out a long monologue.
Right.
You know, and then Louie's like, okay, this is, okay, in there, that's a joke, but... He said, just go read the newspaper. Just write topical jokes. He said,
right, right.
You know.
So you're writing whole pieces.
Yeah, like, I'm writing pieces,
an
man.
Essay.
Yeah, I'm writing an essay. He's like, just. he was like, this is a funny piece. He said, keep this. You know, you should do it. you know, you, yeah. you should do it. But yeah, just read the newspaper and write some. Yeah, and just write jokes on that. I was like, oh, okay, I can do that.
He taught
cool.
you how to write monologue jokes.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And did you get everyone got a lot of jokes on? You got the hang of it?
Yeah.
Did it
yeah,
help you? Like it's weird when you write that type of joke because if you're like a storyteller or somebody who talks about your own life, it's got to be a skill that you're grateful for
uh-huh.
to be able to do that.
When I
had to write monologue jokes, it's always so boring to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, even if you write a good one, it's like even if you wanted to use it, like, what are you going to use it for, a week? And then it's
exactly.
over.
Exactly.
When did Pootie Tang happen?
Pootie Tang happened, I think, during our last season, or during the break, before
yeah.
going into our last season.
Was that your first
yeah.
movie?
No, actually, Louis had me do a little part in his movie, Tomorrow Night.
Oh, yeah, the one with Chuck.
Yeah.
About the photographer.
Sitting in ice cream. Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Sitting in ice cream and doing
yeah.
pictures of the toilet.
Right.
Classic Louis.
Yeah.
What did you play in that? I'm trying to remember.
I was... Someone's date.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was was it JB? Was JB Smoove in that movie too?
He's in all his movies, I think. He's in a lot of them. I can't remember.
But yeah, it was a party scene.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And or wedding scene. Maybe it was at the wedding with Chuck when they got married
right.
or something. I don't know.
It's funny working with Louis because you don't question anything. It's
no,
like,
not
okay.
at all. Not at all.
I guess this is
yeah,
know.
Okay, Louis.
yeah. And Pootie Tang was like so close to being such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became a big deal in the wrong way.
Exactly.
Your part was funny. You were dancing.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yep.
On the
Biggie
street.
Shorty.
Yeah,
Biggie Shorty. Yep. Biggie Shorty.
And Lance was Pootie Tang.
Uh-huh.
Like the story of that movie. I mean, did you, you weren't part of it in, other than acting, but God, what a, like the, just the fact that he had a fight for, that was a real education for him.
I know.
When did you feel like you really broke out as a comic? Like, what was that moment? Because, I mean, like, I remember, like, well, there's Wanda. Well, now Wanda's doing all this stuff, and now Wanda's huge.
Well, I don't know about that. Probably after, I don't know. I did a really good Comedy Central special, Tongue Untied.
An hour?
Yeah, that was well received. But I think, and then Sick and Tired, HBO special.
Oh, that's that was big, right?
Yeah. But I think, to me, the last one I did, you know, I'ma Be Me, that was the one I think that put me over the
How, when was that?
Maybe 3 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's time to do another one, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
well, no, but I mean, like, is that the one where you, you know, what were your topics on that one?
Because
I'm not
Obama.
Uh-huh.
I did a bit about now that we have a black president that you know, I don't have to be so dignified now.
You know, it's like
we made it. You know, so it's, I said before, it's like I've always been dying to buy a whole watermelon, but I couldn't because, you know, it just felt like white people were looking at me.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
It's also, it goes back to how I was raised. You know, my mother, she never let us dance in the car. Like, we're riding in the car, she would tell us to, like, if a good song comes on, we're dancing, she would, like, stop the car. And either, you know, tell us to stop dancing because she said white people were looking at you.
Yeah.
You know, white people looking at you. So, you know, she just thought that, you know, that's, it looks bad.
Well, she,
because white people would look and go, look, see, that's all they do. Dance. That's all. They just cannot stop dancing. Cannot stop dancing.
So she was aware of that.
Oh, totally aware. I think a lot of black people are, especially growing up back, you know.
So it's not just
time.
A matter of
you it, always want to come off as, you know.
You're self-conscious.
Don't give them any ammunition.
Right, of how they're looking
don't,
at you.
Don't
fall
play
into
the
stereotype.
Yeah.
Wow.
Don't sit outside and eat watermelon on the porch. Just don't do that.
If you're going to eat something, eat something else.
Yeah, get a cantaloupe. That's outdoor fruit.
How about a peach?
Yeah, a peach.
Eat a peach.
An apple, a peach.
Stay away from the watermelon.
Yeah, don't eat watermelon sitting outside.
That self-consciousness is crazy.
Yeah.
So that was your special where you're like, fuck it. You know,
right.
You know.
Yeah, and I talked about, you know, being married to a woman, you know, and all that, and having kids. Which,
when did you start? When did you first, like, how did you meet her and how did that come about?
Oh, man, I met her in September of 06.
Yeah.
And just, it was crazy. It really was. It was like I saw her and on a ferry going out to Cherry Grove, Fire Island. And it just.
But you were already out and in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you were comfortable with
that. You know what? I was out, but not. Not
talking
the,
about
yeah, the CNN scroll hadn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and but you were dating and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like it didn't take you by surprise. Like, oh, this is back.
Right
when you met
her.
Right. Right.
No.
Right.
No. After the marriage, it was just it's been all you know.
It,
women.
It was on.
Yeah, it's on. It's on. That was it. Yeah.
And you met her on a boat.
Yeah.
And it just like it was just love at first sight.
Love at first sight.
Really?
Yep.
That's sweet.
Yep.
Did she feel that too?
Actually heard the something said, you know, and I didn't even know it was about her. I turned and she was sitting at the back of this ferry and she was playing with this there was another woman holding a kid and she was playing with that kid and I turned and looked and I mean, like, it was audible. I heard something say, "See, Wanda, that's what you need." And I thought it was saying, "Hey, you need to find someone, settle down, have a family."
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, it was like I was already in a crazy relationship at the time, this crazy chick. And
what kind of crazy?
Drama? Yeah, drama. This is to say drama. Drama. Just drama. And I'm on my way to Fire Island, and all I'm thinking about is, you know, oh man, I got, she doesn't get here until tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So I got all tonight. Yeah. Just bad intentions. I was just full of just nothing but bad intentions heading to the island. So when I heard that, I was like, yeah, well, okay, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was like crazy stuff happened. The girl I was dating, I, you know, it was like, kicking her out.
But this is like on the boat, though. How did you go talk to her? How did you?
No, I didn't talk to her at all. I just looked at her and I was like, wow, okay. And it wasn't until like the next day I ran into her on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And
before your girlfriend got there.
This was after.
Uh huh.
This was after we hadn't gotten into an argument, whatever, and yeah. I had to get rid of her.
Well, you broke up with her that weekend?
Yeah.
So you're fresh out of a breakup, hours.
Mean, hours. I swear to you, hours.
Yeah.
And my friend, we were walking around, and she was like, I don't understand how you keep meeting these crazy girls.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? I'm like, well, what do you mean? She said, well, if you see a nice girl, what do you do? I said, well, you know, I just said hi and whatever. Yeah. And she said, well, like, what do you talk about? And I was like, well, just if she asked me how's my day, I tell her how's my day. She said, you actually say what your day is like? And during that time, I was remodeling my house, right?
Yeah.
I was redoing my kitchen. So she said, okay, so let me see what you do. So I went up to a girl. I was like, hey, how you doing? And the girl's like, you know, that was in L.A.
Yeah.
And she was like, so how you doing? And I said, you know, good and everything. And she asked me, you know, what my day was like. And I said, well, I went to look at tile today because, you know. And my friend was just like, no, next time you talk to a girl, just say you're pretty. And that's it. Oh, just say your day is better now. And I was like, you are corny. I'm not doing that. It's crappy.
She's trying to give you some game.
Yeah. And then she goes, and don't talk about your stupid dog either. Nobody cares. Don't stop. Don't do not. She said, I swear, if you pull out of your phone and show pictures of your dog, I'm going to throw your phone away. Don't do it. I'm like, all right. So we're walking around and we run into, she runs into a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they stop and she introduces me to her friend. And she goes, hey, Wanda, how you doing? How's it going? And I looked at my friend. I looked at the girl and I said, well, I'm redoing my kitchen. You know, and
fuck you.
Fuck you.
I got some new tiles.
And she goes, oh, really? Well, you need to meet my friend Alex. She sells granite and marble. That's her job. And I look, it's her. It's her.
Oh, I'm so glad you fought your friend on that one.
Yeah.
So did you talk about granite?
Been together ever since. Yep. Been together ever since.
And that's been, what, 7 or 8 years?
Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you just locked in.
Mm-hmm.
And you're married.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you get married?
Palm Springs.
Oh, really? So recently? Yeah. How long?
In 08. Yeah.
Right at the first wave.
Right when it was legal.
And that stuck out here.
October.
There was never any of those sort of, right. No, they're not legal anymore.
Right.
It's solid.
Right.
Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, you have two kids.
Two kids.
Did you
have
them?
They're twins. No. She had them.
She had them.
Yeah.
And where'd you get the stuff?
We got the stuff from a sperm bank, Anonymous. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it came out okay?
Came out okay. They're gorgeous. Gorgeous.
How does
blonde
one...
hair, blue eyes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Look like we got them from IKEA.
But what is the process of picking sperm? How does that work?
Basically, you look for... longevity. You look for a healthy donor, and like if they're like saying like their grandparents
uh-huh.
are still alive and
uh-huh.
healthy,
uh-huh.
you know, that's good.
So they have all that information.
Oh yeah, they have to fill out all of that stuff.
Like I'm afraid to even go back too far with my lineage. Like I've never, you know, like I just know like Eastern European Jews, it can't end well for anybody. I know. You know, have you ever tracked your lineage?
Actually, I did that show with Dr. Gates, Dr. Henry Louis Gates on PBS.
Yeah.
He does that Finding Your Roots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah.
The three of my grandparents.
Yeah.
Like both grandparents on my mother's side, they couldn't trace.
Right.
They couldn't go back far. My father's father couldn't do anything, but my father's mother. They were able to go back to 1650.
What?
That's the farthest he's ever been able to go back with an African-American person.
That's crazy. 1650.
Yeah. And it's because they traced it back to Elizabeth Banks. They think she came over from Scotland, but as an indentured servant.
So, a white
in
slave.
In Virginia. Yeah. Yeah. Indentured servant. And she came to Virginia. And she got pregnant by a Negro slave. But back then, it was all the condition of the mother. So she was technically a free white woman. She
right.
was just indentured servant.
Right.
So
right.
she was free. So the baby was free. And that started that whole
line.
Yeah, of free Negroes.
That's crazy.
And at one point, they actually owned slaves, too.
The black people did.
Yeah.
Huh.
But I think it was they were actually trying to, like buy
protect
their family.
Them.
Yeah, protect their other family members.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I don't even
Isn't
know.
Isn't that crazy?
How do you go back that? How do
I know. Well, there was documents they had where, they saw where Elizabeth Banks was charged for bastardy and having sex with the, yeah.
Isn't that weird that the only reason that you could trace your genealogy is because it's a white woman?
Yep. That's the only reason why. And the only reason why we continue to trace because of the other Negroes were free, so there's documentation.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must have been pretty moving.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. It was like, wow, this is crazy.
So how did you, I know you tried the talk show thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was, and you had Keith, you brought Keith in.
Yep.
Were you disappointed about that?
Yeah. I was.
What went wrong with that, you think?
What went wrong with that?
Because I remember
Fox had an idea. They came to me and said, hey, we want to do a talk show with you.
Yeah.
I didn't even go looking for it.
Right.
I just said, okay. And so, you know, we put it together and, you know, John Ridley, God bless him. He did a great job and he was really trying to facilitate what I wanted to do, what I had envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, honestly, it was hard. It was just too much. And with the, you know, we didn't have enough time to gel as far as,
right.
especially with the monologue, you know, they didn't want me to do a typical monologue because
right.
we also had the other part where we would do basically, you know, a weekend update
right.
pretty much. So it was trying to pick one topic. It just, yeah.
Couldn't fall into place.
Right.
It was just a little.
Right. But I think if we would have stayed with it, it would, you know, we would have figured it out. But
it was always fun to see Keith laughing.
Yeah.
And then after that, you got the gig with Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
Actually, I was doing that at the same time. I got Old Christine first.
I think she's
Adventures of Old Christine, and then I started doing that.
A comedy genius.
She is.
You guys were so good together.
Oh.
Like, I'd watch that show.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
I like her. I like you. And, like, you know, it was one of those weird things where, and now I think she's getting, you know, the respect that she deserves, you know, with the Veep thing. But,
right.
like, to work with somebody that the dynamic was just so defined.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were like, oh, Christ. You know, what's going on?
Right.
And she was like,
yeah, right.
How many seasons did you do of that?
Man, we did, was it six? Five or six?
And did you guys become friends?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She, I mean, did you learn anything from her? You know, because she's like, as a comedic actress, it's kind of like.
She's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Fun to watch, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I love watching her.
Yeah.
And I love her process. I mean, she, if it's like a physical thing, she really works it out. And
she does?
Yeah.
So she times
she
out the beats.
Yeah.
See, that's.
She works it out.
See, to
she
me,
really
that's.
Her work ethic is, you know.
But
she
like.
Really, but she loves doing it, so she really approaches it.
But that's
right
like.
Way.
Like, you think. Because I always think that people that are physically funny, it's just some weird gift,
mm-hmm.
which it is.
Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me that if there were beats, physical beats to a joke, she would plot it out.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I love knowing that.
Yeah.
Because I never think that way, do you?
No.
I just want to say the thing.
Yeah, I just want to say the thing.
Yeah.
But she figures it out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now,
because,
what?
You know, it's like, okay, I know the camera's going to be here and whatever. And, okay, does this work if I do it this way?
Really?
You know, yeah. And Andy Ackerman, he was great.
Yeah.
It was so much. I mean, it was so nice having one director.
And that guy who plays the ex-husband is a really gifted comedic actor.
Yeah.
He's Clark one of those guys that you see him in serious roles and you're like, yeah, it's good. But like to do that deadpan, that weird thing he does.
Yeah.
He's got a weird thing about him that's very funny.
Yeah.
So I didn't really
love that. I love that whole cast. It was so much fun being on that show. Yeah.
I didn't realize that you did the White House Correspondents' Dinner. You did
that? Oh, yeah. I did it for his first, the first year.
And that must have been amazing.
That was. It was. It was. I still look back and go, man, I should have taken more pictures. You know,
didn't anyone get pictures?
We had a few pictures or like some of like my half of my, you know, like an eye is missing or whatever. I'm like, man, I said, I might have to pay Getty and get some pictures. This is
so what? Screwed up. Yeah, you could get them.
Yeah.
Did you spend time with him?
Before the dinner, there's like this little reception. It's like and it's maybe a couple hundred people in this little room when he comes in and says hello to the, you know, to the big people, I guess, whatever. But it was just so bizarre because it's like you look and say, oh, there's Katie and Tom Cruise standing in the middle of the floor. And you look over and it's like, oh, there's Madeleine Albright. And, you know,
and you gotta go,
and it's like, this is crazy.
But I think I would fall apart. The fact that you were able to get up there and do that in front of those people, I guess they're just people. But like when I always think about like not having those kind of opportunities, I think it's probably better off. Because as soon as one joke didn't work, I'd be like, "What the fuck is your problem?" But you got to keep your shit together.
Right. Right. Well, my approach was I'm gonna go in, I'm gonna keep it short, and you know, get some big laughs.
Did you interact with Obama?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he just took it like a pro?
Yeah.
He seems like a pretty funny guy. I can't get it's weird, even though he's president, I can't get a full sense of him as a person. Do you?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. He comes off as like pretty much like common sense.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
He's very bright. I mean, you know, just really smart guy.
So you think
when I talked to him, it was, he has the ability where he
feel
he's
it?
He's connected. He's connected. He's not looking over your shoulder to go, oh, yeah, it's Tom Cruise. You know, it's.
Well, you would hope not.
Yeah, right. Right. He doesn't get distracted, which is good.
So he makes you feel like you're being seen and that, you know.
Yes.
But you also feel
that you matter.
Right.
Yeah.
And in your mind, though, you're like, that's the fucking president.
Right.
That's still there.
Right.
There was never like that moment where you're like, this is just some guy.
No.
He feels like the president.
He feels like the president.
Isn't that wild?
Feels like the president.
Yeah.
The first lady feels like the first lady.
Yeah.
I both of them, I did. I said, Mr. President. Yes, sir. I was very, you know, I didn't, you know, hey, Michelle. No, I did not. It was, you know.
Because I saw Clinton once. And, you know, there's that moment where you're like, well, you want to see them as people. And they are people.
Right.
But they're like, there's something other. Like, I don't know if it's our own brains doing it. But like, that's the fucking president.
Right.
Of the United States just standing there. Like, I was at some event because my buddy worked for him. And he was doing a photo line.
Uh-huh.
And it was almost like. He had this weird ability to just be there, but completely not be there. Like, you know, he was just standing there, and it was the president, and these people are at a big money event, so they're taking pictures with him. But he just found this one frequency of politeness and connection, and then he just did the whole line. But that's the weird thing about politicians. It's like, yeah, they're the president, but they're also they're just politicians.
That's all.
So what about her? What about Michelle?
Stunning, warm.
Yeah.
She was, I mean, when we met, because my wife was with me, Alex was with me, and she had just given birth. So I introduced her to, you know, to the first lady, and she turned to Alex and she was like, you mean you put up with her? And we all were laughing. and she was talking to Alex about France because she was saying that she's going to take the girls. They were planning a trip to go to France, so they were talking about you know, France a little bit, because Alex is French. So
she is?
Yeah.
She's from France?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But now she's also from Philly. She's from Philly by way of France?
Let her tell it. She's always from France. I mean, she's a citizen now. She's naturalized. But
so she speaks with a French accent?
Yeah.
Fancy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you go to France?
All the time.
Really?
Yeah.
You love
we're
it?
We're going in again in, what, in July.
Now, know? Can you speak French yet?
A little bit.
Need to if you got someone there
right,
for you.
Exactly.
It must be nice to go to France with someone who speaks French.
Yes.
Does she have family there?
Yeah, yeah.
That's exciting.
All her family's there. So actually, her family comes here a lot, too.
So did you ever think in your life that would be part of your life?
No.
Isn't that wild?
No. Married to this, you know, beautiful white French woman. And I have two, you know, little blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids. Really? The girl from Virginia? The country girl from Virginia?
The country girl from Virginia who used to, husband.
Yeah, right,
used to sit in the back of the room going, when we leaving?
Right, right.
Unbelievable.
Bizarre.
Do you sometimes just wake up and go like, how the fuck?
What the hell?
That's so
all
lucky.
The time.
Really?
All the time. I wake up and I just look around like, what the hell? How did this happen? How did I get here?
Are you grateful?
Yes, I am. I am. But also, it's just all bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, I think like, what the hell? What are you doing?
You got to pinch yourself? Like,
yeah. This is crazy.
Oh, I can't even imagine it.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's like, I wake up in the middle of the night. And,
yeah.
And although it's like one of the scariest things ever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the kids are five, the twins, right? So it's one of the scariest things ever to wake up in the middle of the night and see two little white kids standing at the edge of your bed. It's some creepy shit. It's just creepy. It's creepy.
Because there's a moment where you're like, what
the hell?
Yeah.
What are these crazy little white kids doing at the foot of my bed?
Yeah, what did I do?
Right. What kind of horror movie is this? What is this?
And then you go like, they're mine.
Oh, shit. They're my kids.
They're crying because you look so frightened.
Right. Yes. Right.
What happened? I'm sorry.
I was
dreaming that I was living the life that I was as a child.
Right. You're like, right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's
but they
hilarious.
Crawl into bed with us, and it's bizarre. It really is.
And they've been with you the whole time.
And that's the thing with kids. They that's all they know.
There's no color line. It doesn't even. I imagine they'll ask questions eventually.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, but hasn't happened yet.
They'll say things like, okay, like my friend so-and-so, they have a mommy and a daddy, but I just have two mommies, right? Like, yeah, that's pretty much it. Okay. Right. They take the information, they go away, and then they...
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and I heard my daughter explain that she met some girl was playing with another little girl on the beach,
mm-hmm.
and she came over to ask me something, and, you know, I said, yeah, whatever, and she went back, and the little girl asked her, so that's your mommy? She's like, yeah, that's my mommy and that's my mommy too. And the little girl looked at him and went like, oh, okay. And they both, you know, and they just kept playing. It wasn't any you're going to hell or how dare you. It wasn't anything. It was just, oh, okay.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Because it's at those moments where you realize that all that bad shit is put in them.
Right.
You know, there's no judgment really.
None.
It's just sort of none. Like, all right, I'm a kid and now we have kid stuff to deal with.
Exactly.
No wrong or right or moral judgments.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's like a lot of hope in that, but there's also that sad element.
Oh,
that,
it's
like,
coming.
Yeah, something.
Oh, it's coming.
So you have two girls.
No, a boy and a girl.
Oh, okay. Well, there's balance.
Yeah.
Well, you seem great. I'm so glad you were able to do this.
Thank you. Me too.
Thanks for doing it.
No problem.
That's it. That's the show, folks. And again, a little audio mishap at the end there, but it was great to talk to Wanda. It was great to see Wanda, and I hope you enjoyed that. Go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs. Pick up that app for free and upgrade to premium. Stream all the hundreds of episodes available. Hundreds of episodes. I'm tired. What else? Yeah, you can get some merch. You can leave a comment if you have a Facebook page. You can you peruse the episode guide. You can pick up some justcoffee.coop. All right. Okay, are we good? Are we good? Are we good? Are we good? I'm not finding that I miss liver mush. You know, I'm not like, shit, man, I wish I had that here. I could probably go find it. That's the kind of thing that people move to other places and they're sad about not being able to find, and they usually find one proprietor. But might have the liver mush, and they become the one of three people that buys the liver mush. And then you got to sort of question whether or not, how long has the liver mush been standing around? How long has it been around? Is that a fresh brick? I bet you I could find a comic that comes from the South and still eats liver mush. I don't know. I think I've spent way too much thought on it. But let it be said again that I'm good with liver mush. I'm good with it. Boomer lives! Hey, folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me: a tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.